in and tell us how you are doing at facebook.com/VOA1TheHits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is made for English learners, so we speak a bit slower, and we use words and sentences especially written for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel talks about career training in the United States. Gregory Stockel brings us a story about a new use for an old building in Ukraine. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today in the United States, it is Father's Day. So we will celebrate fathers. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. We will finish our 30 minutes together with our series on America's presidents, written and hosted by Kelly Jean Kelly. But first, the education report.
One morning in June, A.J. Muir, an 18-year-old high school student from Springfield, Virginia, was taking a test in an empty classroom. It was not an English or math test. Instead, it was a test that recognized his skills in keeping computer networks safe, a field called cybersecurity. Muir is going to college this autumn, but he possibly could get a good job tomorrow after passing the test. Muir had prepared for the test by taking classes at Edison Academy. The school is one of the Career and Technical Education, CTE, centers in Fairfax County. Students at the centers take traditional classes, such as English and history, in addition to technical ones like cybersecurity and information technology. If President Joe Biden's $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan is approved by the U.S. Congress, there will be a strong demand for CTE students like Muir. Companies will need people who know how to work with metal and electricity. They will need workers to build parts for roads, bridges, and places to charge batteries of electric cars. A 2017 report from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce showed that there are 30 million jobs in the U.S. paying $55,000 per year that do not require a college degree. The jobs require the kind of education that comes from the CTE classes. Joseph Wolf teaches electrical work, construction, and engineering at Edison Academy. Most students who take his classes do not go straight to college.
We're not anti-college. We just provide an alternate path to a traditional college route.
People who want to work as electricians need up to 4 years of training to get started. But the students who leave Wolf's class are already 1 year ahead. They can work and study their trade at the same time. Wolf added that some of his former students with more experience earn close to $100,000 per year. The U.S. government started paying for career and technical training as early as 1917. It is sometimes called vocational training. In those days, students learned to work with wood and metal and were able to get well-paying jobs without going to college. Over time, students were told that a good future required a 4-year college degree. In many cases, that is still true, but Muir is part of a new group of American students who are hearing a different message.
College is great, but it comes at a cost.
A 4-year degree from a private university in the U.S. can easily cost over $100,000. At the end of the 4 years, students may have more knowledge, but they are not necessarily ready to join the workforce. Spending less money, students can learn about information technology, nursing, or cybersecurity at community colleges. They can also learn to fix vehicles or cook in a restaurant. Other countries have similar training programs for young people, and some may be better prepared for economic changes than the U.S. I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. Next is Gregory Stockel.
Entrepreneurs in Western Ukraine are turning a large manufacturing building from Soviet times into a center for education, business, and art. An entrepreneur is a person who starts a business and is willing to risk loss in order to make money. They hope this will drive development in a country that has problems with corruption, political insecurity, and a recession. The disused factory in the city of Ivano-Frankivsk once produced gas meters and other products. Now, it is a growing city space with a green microfarm, a space to show art, offices, and a children's education group. The creators of the Promprilad.renovation project named it after the factory. They bought the 36,000 square meter site in 2019. They have raised more than $8.5 million from local investors for the remodel. The project's co-founder is Chief Executive Officer Yuri Filuk. "We are creating an innovation center, which will include 4 main fields: education, art, new economy, and urbanism. Why these fields? Because they drive development of any area, any society," he said. Forbes magazine named Ivano-Frankivsk the best city for doing business in Ukraine. It placed ahead of the capital of Kiev and the city of Lviv. Ivano-Frankivsk is in the foothills of the Carpathian Mountains. Corruption is part of life in Ukraine. Also, its economy has been hit hard by the pandemic, falling by 4% last year. Transparency International is a non-profit organization that works to spread information about corruption and suggest policies to fight it. In its 2020 Corruption Perception Index, Transparency International gave Ukraine 33 out of 100 points, where zero means corruption effectively replaces the government. The project only takes up a sixth of the 36,000 square meter area. It also houses the local government's Department for Investment Policy. I'm Gregory Stockel.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and sayings in American English. In the United States, we celebrate Father's Day on the third Sunday in June. So, for today's show, we will celebrate fathers, too. Now, being a father is no easy task. To make it easier, some dads like to make jokes. Jokes, of course, are supposed to be funny. But dad jokes are known for being not funny. They are corny. They often result in eye rolls from the children who hear them. Many children are embarrassed when they and their friends are subjected to fatherly humor. For example, here is a joke my father used to make when I was a child. He loved to watch baseball on television. So if I came between him and the TV, he would say, "You make a better door than you do a window." In other words, I can't see the TV. Move. Little did I know, he is not the only dad to say this. To research this story, I searched the web and found several sites that gather dad sayings. A list on boardpanda.com included his joke, "You make a better door than you do a window." Now let's talk about work. Dads love to say this joke to any worker in any kind of workplace. So, are you working hard or hardly working? Many children have been embarrassed at stores, restaurants, repair shops, just about anywhere with that joke. Dads have a few sayings they find funny about money. If your father gives you a little money, not a lot, he might say, "Don't spend it all in one place." Or he might tell you to keep the change, when in fact there is not much money left over. Thanks, Dad. When it comes to paying a bill, Dad's corny side really shines through. Before even looking at a bill, they might say something like, "What's the damage?" Or they might look at their young children and say, "I hope you brought your money." In life, there are few guarantees. Thankfully, you can count on a father for many things. They are usually there for their children through good and bad times, or through thick and thin. You can also count on many fathers to say the same things when they see another man washing a car. It is almost guaranteed that he will say one of two things. He will either say, "Hey, you can do mine next," or, "You missed a spot." Oh, Dad, that's a good one. Now let's talk about departures. When it's time to leave, why just say, "Come on, let's go"? Dads have so many interesting and really corny ways to say it's time to go. Here are just a few. Ready to skedaddle? Let's rock and roll. Time to hit the road. And remember, you don't have to be a father to use any of these expressions. Just know that if you do, expect a few eye rolls in your general direction. And that's it for this Words and Their Stories. Time for us to skedaddle. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo. And now, Kelly Jean Kelly.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we will finish our story about Abraham Lincoln. He led the United States during the Civil War. That conflict lasted from 1861 to 1865. In it, the southern states of the Confederacy battled the northern states of the Union. As a wartime president, Lincoln was known for several things. He was actively involved in plotting the military campaign. When Lincoln was unhappy with the performance of his top generals, he dismissed them. He also greatly increased the power of the presidency, even beyond what the U.S. Constitution permitted. And Lincoln struck at the issue at the heart of the Civil War, slavery. He ordered that enslaved people in the Confederate States be forever free. His order is called the Emancipation Proclamation. Seven months after the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect, the Confederacy and the Union clashed in the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. The army of Confederate General Robert E. Lee was on the offensive. Lee planned to move the fighting out of the South and invade the North. He won a major victory against Union forces at Chancellorsville, Virginia. Then he pushed across Maryland and into Pennsylvania. A Union army, led by General George Meade, met Lee's troops near a small crossroads town called Gettysburg. In the first days of July 1863, a little more than 2 years after the start of the Civil War, Confederate and Union troops each struggled to claim the territory. Both sides suffered massive casualties. But Lee believed Confederate troops were close to winning and that Meade had spread his soldiers thin. So, on the third day of fighting, he ordered a direct attack on Union forces. Lee's soldiers aimed at the center of the Union line, positioned behind stone walls at the top of a ridge, or raised area. Confederates first used cannons to fire artillery at the ridge. Then about 15,000 Confederate soldiers began marching across more than a kilometer of an open field. The Union soldiers behind the walls fired on them. More Union forces attacked the Confederate soldiers on the left and right. In half an hour, three-quarters of the soldiers in the open field had been killed or wounded. Thousands more on each side also died. The surviving Confederate forces quickly withdrew and waited for Meade to attack again. But, much to Lincoln's dissatisfaction, he did not. The following morning, Lee led the survivors back to Virginia. He left behind 28,000 soldiers dead, wounded, or missing, more than one-third of his total army. The Union had suffered 23,000 casualties, almost as many. The Battle of Gettysburg is important in American history for several reasons. One is the large number of killed and wounded soldiers, the largest until World War II in the 20th century. Another reason is because it was a turning point in the war. It ended Lee's invasion of the North and weakened his army permanently. Over the same days, Union troops won another major victory under General Ulysses S. Grant in the southern city of Vicksburg, Mississippi. The battles at Vicksburg and Gettysburg began to turn the conflict to the Union's favor. Finally, the Battle of Gettysburg is almost always linked to a speech Lincoln gave there, known as the Gettysburg Address. It is only about 270 words long, but it is one of the most famous speeches in American history. Lincoln spoke at the opening of a cemetery for all the soldiers who had died at Gettysburg, but he also used the event to speak to the entire country about the war. He said, "The conflict was a test of whether the American form of government could survive. That is, a government of the people, by the people, for the people." He also pointed to the Declaration of Independence as the country's founding document. He said, "The nation had been conceived in liberty," and, he said, "it was dedicated to the idea that all men are created equal." Historians have noted that, in the speech, Lincoln changed the reasoning behind the war effort. It continued to be a struggle to reunite the country. But after the Gettysburg Address, it was also more clearly a struggle to free enslaved people. In 1864, Lincoln won re-election to a second term as president. His new vice president was Senator Andrew Johnson from the southern state of Tennessee. At the swearing-in ceremony, the president spoke about the need for the North and South to come together again peacefully. In that speech, his famous second inaugural, Lincoln called on all Americans to finish the war. He urged them to care for the wounded, the wives and children of soldiers killed in battle, and to seek a just and lasting peace. Most importantly, Lincoln asked Americans to reunite with malice toward none, with charity for all. In other words, with respect and kindness. A few weeks later, the war effectively ended. Lincoln's military plan had worked. He had finally found two generals whom he trusted, Ulysses S. Grant and William T. Sherman. Sherman led a campaign across the southern states. His path through Georgia, from the city of Atlanta to the city of Savannah, was known as Sherman's March to the Sea. The march destroyed farms and houses along the way. The destruction was terrible. It was also effective. The Confederate Army was left with little food or communication. At the same time, Grant surrounded Lee's army in Virginia. Grant cut these Southern troops off from supplies, too. Lee realized he must surrender to Grant, although, he said, he would rather die 1,000 deaths. The two men met on April 9, 1865, at a farmhouse in the town of Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. Lee famously wore his finest military uniform and sword. Grant famously wore his fighting clothes, still marked with mud. Lee and Grant spoke briefly. Then Grant wrote the terms of surrender. As Lincoln had asked, the terms were respectful and generous. Lee's officers were free to keep their horses and their weapons, and the Union Army would give the Confederate soldiers food. When some Union troops began to play a victory song, Grant told them to stop. "The war is over," he said. "The rebels are our countrymen again." Five days after Lee surrendered, Lincoln and his wife, Mary, went to a theater in Washington, D.C. To put it mildly, the last years had been very difficult for them. While Lincoln was supervising the war effort, both his third and fourth son became sick with typhoid. The younger boy recovered. The older did not. Willie Lincoln died in the White House at age 11. Mary and Abraham Lincoln were crushed. Mary Lincoln blamed herself. She believed God was punishing her. In their own ways, the Lincolns continued to mourn in the years after Willie's death. At one point, Lincoln said he hoped he and Mary could feel happier. He urged them to have some pleasant times together. So, with the war coming to an end, they went to a light-hearted play at Ford's Theater. It was the night of Friday, April 14th, 1865, a day that Christians were marking that year as Good Friday, the anniversary of Jesus' death. The theater was not far from the White House. The Lincolns had seats in a box high above the stage. Toward the end of the performance, a man entered their box and shot Abraham Lincoln in the back of the head. Then the gunman jumped to the stage, breaking his leg as he landed. He called out a Latin expression, "Sic semper tyrannis." It means, "thus always to tyrants." Some observers say the man added, "the South is avenged." The gunman was a Southerner named John Wilkes Booth. He had plotted to kill the president after hearing Lincoln support voting rights for African Americans. Booth briefly escaped, but was later captured and hanged. Lincoln was taken to a nearby boarding house. He seemed lifeless and could hardly breathe. Doctors examined him, but found they could not save him. Lincoln died the following morning. He was 56 years old. The emotions of many Americans changed from joy at the coming end of the Civil War to shock and mourning. Thousands lined up along railroad tracks as Lincoln's body made its way from Washington, D.C., to his home in Illinois. Even many Southerners mourned Lincoln's death. They understood that he would treat them kindly. A little more than 6 weeks after Lincoln's assassination, the last Confederate army surrendered, and the war was considered officially over. The country was reunited, and the process of legally freeing enslaved people had begun. Although these acts are tremendous parts of Lincoln's legacy, in time his public image would grow only larger and more celebrated. As one witness to Lincoln's death reportedly said, "Now he belongs to the ages." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.